So all these crazy things are going on in the world. But there was a ray of sunlight that was released on us at 11 our time last Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
And it has had me in a fucking chokehold ever since.
Lockdown.
Bro, I love Beyonce album releases. It's
the unity on the timelines.
Yeah, bro. Like, it's been beautiful. Like, also, like, shout out to them, the white Taylor Swift fans that are also Beyonce fans that be reading the fuck out of
the other,
the non cooperating whites. Y'all are doing the Lord's work, because I ain't arguing with the motherfuckers.
It must be done.
But yeah, and I will support your savior when she comes out with an album in a couple weeks. I know they ain't gonna speak for everybody on this podcast.
All I've seen, anybody on the TikTok side of life that has decided to make a video explaining their dislike for this album, they've been getting ate up. And it's like, I get it, you can have an opinion, but it isn't just like a surface level criticism, like, oh, you know, I listened to the album and, you know, I just don't really like it. I don't think this one is for me. It's always been like, this isn't country, and I don't, this is boring, and how is this, you know.
Their language is very reductive when they're talking about her.
Right.
Like, she's not an icon. Like, separated from myself as a Beyonce fan, she's an icon. That's a fact. You can have opinions, but they have to be rooted within fact. We've made a mistake. I saw one TikTok. They were like, we made a mistake where we made it to where, yes, everybody has an opinion, but everybody does not have an informed opinion. So not all opinions are equal.
Mm.
And that is the mistake a lot of these TikTokers have been making.
Mm-hmm.
That Sam Dahl lady, oh my God.
Sam Dahl.
That's the main one that went viral, saying that I don't see this as album of the year. I don't think it's worthy of album of the year. It's very boring. It's lazy.
Oh, and, that's the one that had the brown hair and the red shirt.
Yeah, and then she ended up deleting it because everybody was reading her for filth. But her video was coded with microaggressions. And not like the microaggressions that people make it to be like. You ever like hear some people talk about microaggressions? It's almost like, I think, I don't know. These are like real deal like microaggressions. Lazy.
Mm.
Those are like coded language that have described black people for years. And you can't just use those. Especially on an album like this.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the takes from some people on TikTok have been, oh, so we can't criticize her? She's a god to y'all. She can't criticize. Like, no, that is not what we're saying. But like we talked about, like you brought up last week, some of y'all don't listen to music, and a lot of y'all don't know history about music or anything beyond surface level things.
Yep.
So, there are people giving hot takes like that. The Sam Dahl lady gave her review, I think, the day that Act 2 came out. Like, literally, like, around noon. So, the album had been out 12 hours. If you listen to an album that dense with 27 fucking tracks twice, and you just say, yeah, it's not good, and then you name like six or seven songs that are good, you're like, baby girl, you didn't do the required reading to be involved in this conversation.
You didn't read the syllabus.
No. Nah. Look, she did that skim reading, you know, where
she read the spark notes.
Right. You didn't read Great Gatsby, bitch. What did the green represent then?
you ain't read it from front to back.
No.
and from preface to last ink.
And it's becoming easier who actually listened to the album. That's why some of these takes are fucking crazy. Now, I have tried not to say how I felt about this album because I wanted y'all to listen to this fucking episode.
I did not try not to say how I felt about this album.
I feel like on this episode, we're going to approach this in two different ways, and neither one of us are going to be wrong in how we're doing it.
I mean,
I think, look, I'm going to try.
She doesn't really care for Beyonce, and I'm like, how?
But it's almost like the conversation that we had about, like, the separate kingdoms in rap. Mm. The separate kingdoms between the girlies, some of them never healed, which I think is insane because I love Rihanna's music.
I do, too.
Anti is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Anti was great.
If Rihanna never makes another album and she went out with Anti, that's...
Anti gonna get played for... Ever. Many years to come.
That is a perfect album.
Yeah.
But like, so I'll be thinking of, I love Rihanna's music. I love, to a certain degree, Lady Gaga's music, people like that. But it's some hardline fans that never moved on to the accepting that Beyonce is Beyonce for a reason. It's not just hype. Mm. But that's also what I don't like about how we talk, like how we as a society talk about music. We talk about it in these, like, this, like, perfectionist fallacy method of either it's amazing or it's fucking trash. Mm-hmm. That either it's this or that. It's so much gray when you're really listening to so much music. And then the other thing, it's so much music that it's music that I can appreciate as good that it's just not for me. Mm-hmm. And I won't be like, it's fucking trash or yeah. It's overrated.
Yeah.
Like, when we talked about Olivia Rodrigo's first album, and I was like, I felt like I was listening to somebody's diary. I felt like I was listening to a 19-year-old girl's diary. And that's not for me, but I understand why it's amazing to people that love it. I understand why people love Taylor Swift's music. I wouldn't just be like, this shit's fucking trash. Especially 10 hours after the album fucking came out.
Yeah.
And then plus, bro, no matter how, look, we're going to talk about it, but no matter how anybody feels about this album, everybody at least has one song that they like from this album. That's how fucking good the album is.
I feel like everybody got at least three.
Yeah.
One is low. There's definitely one.
Okay, yeah, at least three. The three, all right, what's your three that you think are certified, nobody can hate?
American Requiem, for one, like, that type of an intro to an album? What? The layers? And honestly, it took me so many times to listen to it, but the lowest harmony voice layer that she has on there. Oh my God. And then on top of just like the musicality and the history and the actual message, it wasn't no little intro.
No, it was a statement piece.
It was a full song. It wasn't yeah. just a quick little 2 minute, all right, here we go. No, that was a full song. Full service.
First I was listening to it, I was like, oh, this is about to be amazing. This is about to be fucking amazing.
It was so like, it was gritty, but it was also just like melodic. There was so many different emotions in it. Like when she's singing the super light, airy notes, it just feels like you're looking into a fucking prism of light. But then she gets down and dirty. There's a lot of talking going on. Like, now you feel like you in an old Western, somebody about to bust into the saloon.
There is a lot of Prince coded sounds on that first, on a rare American Requiem. A lot of Prince is in that. As well as, like, of course, the Western influence.
The instruments, the vocals. I got Bohemian Rhapsody feels. Who else? What other feels did I get?
Stand for something.
That's literally what I'm thinking in my head.
That sounds almost like Stone-ish. Have you ever heard Is a Riot Going On by Sly Stone, the album?
Possibly.
It has Everyday People on it. Mm-hmm. And I caught you smiling again. Caught you smiling.
I can't recall that one.
But yeah, like, I listened to that album heavy for like one summer. I can't remember what summer it was. It was like 2013. It was when I first got my record player. I just played that album all the time.
It also just had a lot of, like, I feel like just like period art in it. Because some of it felt just like real 70s. Real 60s, maybe even 50s.
There's gospel influence. There's...
You got rock.
And I feel
bluegrass.
Like...
Bluegrass.
I feel like that's a perfect, like, thesis for it. Especially what the album ends up becoming.
It's multifaceted. But that, as an intro... Probably her best intro on an album to date.
Yeah.
And this is her, what, 8th solo album?
Yeah.
Because Renaissance was what everybody was calling B7. B7.
And then if you're not including the Carters album.
Right.
Yeah. And then The Gift. Mm. So, yeah. 8. So, our girl starts off with a banger, and then she goes, when they released the track list, I was like, is she really going to cover the Beatles? Is she really going to cover the Beatles? Everybody who knows me knows how much I fucking love the Beatles. And I was like, she's going to do Blackbird? Which... It's another reason why I know some of y'all niggas don't know shit.
He finna get in his history bag.
That song was written about black women in the civil rights movement, especially the Little Rock Nine. That's what Paul McCartney wrote Blackbird about. Bird is a slang term in England for girl.
Oh, okay.
So black girl.
Hmm.
And the fact that she got 4 other black women that are all country stars on that song to sing with her. And if y'all are Beatles fans, it almost sounds like she's rapping over, she's singing over the masters. Mm. And you know why? Because Paul McCartney's playing the guitar in that fucking song. And he produced it. And, of course, wrote it with him and John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it sounds exactly like Blackbird.
It literally does.
I repeated listening to it because I was like, bro, did she get Beatles master recordings? Which the Beatles don't sign off on anything, just everything. But for her to, what it sounded like she had Beatles masters is a different flex level than anything that any of these other motherfuckers is doing. But no, she did even bigger than that. She brought in Paul McCartney to do the shit.
Bro.
icon.
Just legendary shit already. Second song.
And then that Sam Doll lady. This is how I knew she didn't know what the fuck she was talking about.
Because she said Blackbird is one of her favorite songs.
Right. She's a Beatles fan. But she said it was boring. No. No, bro.
Absolutely not.
Ain't no way. No Beatles fan. Blackbird is not my favorite Beatles song, but I've always known what the meaning was, and it means something to me. So as a black Beatles fan growing up, that song means something to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of it is, it sounds just like the other.
I was going to say, it's the exact same song.
And then she was complaining. She was like, but she didn't put like a Beyonce spin on it. But then later in her review, she gets mad at Beyonce's cover of Jolene. Like, bitch, you can't have it both ways.
The Beyonce spin is her voice.
The voice was voicing also.
What do you mean?
People make up these things to just criticize her on that are, you don't hold anybody else to this standard.
The goalpost was moved 50-11 times back and forth.
And then, like, I've heard other people be like, she just wants to be on top too much.
Well, if this is something that you're making a career out of, and being on top is how you also maintain your livelihood, and it's also something that you're passionate about, who in this field doesn't want to be on top?
People don't do that to men.
Exactly.
But it's just like with the stuff that's going on with, like, not to get off subject, but the stuff that's going on with, like, Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark about them being competitive and everything. Nobody criticizes, like, LeBron for still wanting to be the number one basketball player in the league.
Nope.
So why do you look like Beyonce's just trying to be on top? Yes, she's competing against Ghost at this point.
She is on top.
Yes.
And she, on top of that, like I said, when this is your career and your passion, it don't really take nothing for you to be on top when you putting in the work. And Beyonce has told us in many a documentary what she puts into doing these tours and concerts, doing these albums. The lady has told us she got how many unreleased songs at home?
Hey, that vault is...
She worked on Renaissance for 4 fucking years. So, like, for one, and then she won, the Innovators Award at the...
iHeart Awards.
iHeart Radio. She is ahead of her time, which is also how you stay on top. Because when you think about it in retrospect, learning that Renaissance took 4 years, which means all of these acts took years. Learning that, you have to be thinking about so many things and how time is going to change things and what's going to stick. Like,
yeah,
she is just different like that. Her brain works different. She works differently. The shit that she did to keep fucking self-titled a secret, basically recording music videos on their off days during tour. Like, how do you not be on top when you have that kind of work ethic?
And then, like, to be all the way frank, all of it doesn't work. And that's also fine. That's part of the music and that's part of the artistry. Like, everything in this album isn't perfect. But a lot of it is fucking amazing. So it's not even about, like...
And the fact that she addresses it directly and indirectly. She addresses it directly in American Requiem. When she said, you know, they said I wasn't country enough.
Yeah.
Said I wouldn't saddle up.
We gotta get through some of these tracks
real quick. If that ain't country, tell me what it, like, what? Grandbaby of a Moonshine Man? Like, what? She addresses it directly.
Did you see that lady who said that she did that TikTok and her daddy was from Gadsden and her daddy didn't realize he knew Beyonce's granddaddy, the Moonshine Man? Mm-mm. That shit was hilarious. Like, she was like, they like, her dad is like a conservative dude, and he started listening to Beyonce after 16 Carriages, and after I just went blank.
Texas Hold'em,
and so he started becoming a Beyonce fan, and then somebody from his hometown, Gadsden, they were like, you know, that's Big Mac's granddaughter. That's Big Mac's granddaughter.
That's crazy.
I know. Every time I see a Knowles around here, I'll be like, sing something. But so then track three is 16 Carriages, which on this album,
whole different context.
It sounds fucking amazing.
Bro, so I originally liked 16 Carriages and Texas Hold'em when it came out, but I was more fond of Texas Hold'em.
Same.
Not that I didn't like 16 Carriages, but Texas Hold'em, you know, just catchy.
It just had that it factor.
Yeah, it had the little twangy guitar in the beginning.
And Hit-Boy destroyed that track.
But 16 Carriages in the context of this whole album made me cry.
Same.
Honestly, I haven't cried listening to an album in so long. I can't even tell you when the last time it happened.
It's been a while. Especially on first listen of a song I've heard before. It's... the lyrics hit harder. Like, her just talking about leaving home at 16 and pretty much just being on the road. And you think about it from the eyes of an adult. It's like, yeah, she was a baby just out here trying to live her dream. But that 16 is still 16.
Yeah.
And a lot of us do this weird thing to where we try to adult size, like, child stars or entertainers. 16 is still 16 years old.
That's a junior in high school, sophomore for us.
Yeah, you just learning how to drive and you on stages and tour buses going all over the country trying to live your dream,
missing out on all the regular teenage shit, working your ass off.
And it's a certain level of sadness I've never really thought about when I think of Beyonce. And it added to her mythos.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I didn't know this part about it. All right, so the album was called Cowboy Carter. A lot of people were like, maybe there's reference to the Clark, I mean, not Clark, to the Carter family.
Mm-hmm.
Carter family is one of the most historic families in country music. You could kind of, like, the best way to explain it is like, imagine the Jacksons, the Clark sisters, and the DeBarges, the Isleys, all rolled up in one for country music. A lot of, like, the father of the Carters wrote a lot of songs that have become standards in country music. So one of the songs they have is, Worried Men Blues. Part of that song, like, it talks about being imprisoned and being taken off to a chain gang and talking about 16, they didn't say carriages, but it's like 16, what are they called? Like 16 horse-drawn, we'll say carriages buggies? For them. Buggies. taking somebody away. So this is actually a flip of an old country song.
Okay.
By the Carter Family. Most of us, just common people that just know the Carter Family. June Carter Cash, who was Johnny Cash's second wife, who in Walk the Line, that's the woman he falls in love with. She's part of the Carter clan.
Okay.
This not something they just made. This ain't no ordinary shit.
This ain't no homemade shit.
In different areas. This ain't no homemade shit.
Listen, Beyonce be researching. Do you hear me?
She is a history student and lover of music.
She makes everything connect. And that just adds to the level of, like, awe and amazement and love for the things that she puts out. And honestly, I think with 16 Carriages being the third song, I think why it hit so hard, like, emotionally was because American Requiem and Blackbird kind of brought it full circle. Because it's like you hear her start off, you know, talking about injustices and, you know, just talking about how things need to change. And then you hear her going back to civil rights and things.
While making a change in music by having those women featured on it.
Exactly. And then you have 16 Carriages where she's talking about how hard she's had to work and everything that she has had to give up and sacrifice and how it's affected her. Like now with 16 Carriages, I feel like she's getting personal. Like this is when the personal journey starts.
Which flows into Protector. Ugh. Which is such a beautiful fucking song. I don't even have children, but I'm like, once I have babies, I'm gonna play this shit. Like that's how I'll be listening to like Stevie and the Beatles too. I'll be like, man, when I have babies, I'm gonna play this shit for my babies.
It just came in so softly for, and then also with Rumi asking for the lullaby, and then it just comes in like making you feel like you want a fucking lake house on vacation.
Right.
On the porch with some whiskey, listening to the fucking lake roll over your ankles. Like it just felt so like a fucking summer breeze the way it came in.
It's like, man, this lady is fucking good, bro.
Then the vocals
as a whole, this album is her best vocal album by
far.
She
gets so much into her lower register
and I love it.
You know I love a lower register. As a woman with a lower register, right. and a Jasmine Sullivan fan.
Even when you said it, I was like, damn, that sounded good. When she,
I love when she reaches deep. And this song started with a lower register note, but it was just so, like, peaceful.
Which, another song we're going to talk about later displays it perfectly, and it's amazing. What is after Protector?
My Rose.
And all right, here's one of the criticisms I have of this album. Now, granted, I ain't got the vinyl copy yet, but it's on the way. The physical copies of this album are not the same as the track list. And then, like, on the vinyl copy, it doesn't have Cowboy Carter anywhere on the thing. It just has Beyonce spell their original family way name. It doesn't have Yaya on it. It doesn't have, it's another song it doesn't have. It's a couple songs they don't have. And then plus on some of them, My Rose is titled Mr. Sir.
Oh, I have seen it.
So My Rose is about Sir. And a lot of people were trying to be like, oh, she just in love with this man. I know, idiot, it's to her son. Yeah, she is in love with a little boy.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so then my rose, and then is it Dolly P?
No, next is Smoke Hour with Willie Nelson. Whew. She got Willie Nelson, Dolly P, Linda Carter, or Linda Martell.
Yep. Hey. Different areas.
Miley Cyrus.
All right, so one of the criticisms I've seen for this album is that it's all over the place. To some degree, it is, but the way she brought it together with like the interludes and the skits makes it work perfectly to me, especially like we talked about last week. I don't like long albums, and a lot of people don't, but the way she was able to bring it together, it looks like in the end, was actually some pretty dope shit. But having Willie Nelson on the Smoke Hour, and it sounds like a radio, like an NPR country radio show. Okay, and Smoke Hour, after Smoke Hour is what?
Just for Fun. Or no, Texas Hold'em.
Yeah. Which the Smoke Hour intro and then Texas Hold'em makes Texas Hold'em bang even more. That's already a banger.
To me, like the way that this album is ordered gives short film. Like it gives like, and we know Beyonce is a visual artist. To me, it's like you can, the way that this is lined up, you can almost have a storyline as a short film, like a 5-minute film with clips of every one of these songs.
In the artist release that she had, I think right the day that it came out, she said each of these was inspired by different Western films.
Let's see.
And that's also where you get like spaghetti, because spaghetti Westerns were films in like the 60s and 70s that were shot in Italy. And they were Westerns, but they were shot on a cheaper budget. But some of them ended up being some of the greatest Western films of all time. Django, the original Django, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. A lot of Clint Eastwood movies are spaghetti Westerns. So, yeah, it's levels to this shit.
Whole lot of levels.
Okay, so after I'm doing all of this without my phone, guys. So,
then we have Bodyguard.
Bro. Nigga. I have never heard a song just sound perfect. The first time I listened to it, to where I'm like, oh no, that's the song of the summer.
This is definitely the song of the summer.
Bro, that is a perfect fucking song.
Bro, this is a fucking, like, you in a car, top down, like, just wind in your hair type song.
I feel like a white woman when I listen to this song. And everybody knows exactly what I mean when I say that. I can't explain it any other way. I'm just like, do that. That move. Only white women do that move, but
the awkward hands in the air, no rhythm, caressing your hair and shit. Just, hey. Yeah.
I feel white woman wine drunk when I listen to Bodyguard. Bro, that shit is magic. That shit is that crinet.
Yeah.
That's such a Fleetwood Mac coded fucking song. Fleetwood
Mac is the vibe. That's it.
That shit is perfect. That's like you chilling on a yacht just drinking Aperol Spritz, whatever the fuck they call.
Aperol
Spritz. Just white woman it.
Fleetwood is it. That's the perfect
correlation
for it's that one.
Christine McVeigh to a T.
It's just, that's why I said, like, it's a lot of her songs that also give, like period moments. Like, this one gave real laid-back late 70s,
early 80s yacht rock.
Miami Vice.
Bro, how lit do you think Julius was when he heard this? Like,
okay.
Got one. I know it's not about Julius, but you know when Julius gets home alone, you're like, I appreciate you too, B.
Yeah. Bodyguard is one of them ones.
Bodyguard is a fucking certified banger, and that is one of the...
That's one of the singles.
That's one of the three undeniables. I don't care if you like... I mean, if you hate Beyonce or whatever, if you play Bodyguard right now, somebody be like, play that shit again. It don't matter. I feel like if I went up to anybody under the age of 90 and played Bodyguard to them, they'd be like, let that shit ride one more time.
Yeah, for sure.
Let me hear that again.
Run that back. Put that on repeat.
Definitely. That is one of the three certified, I don't give a fuck what you feel about this album. That is one of those ones. After that,
Dolly P.
The way Dolly Parton says hussy is the funniest shit.
Hussy. That's what she said.
That hussy with the good hair. And then also, Dolly Parton don't like redheads the way I don't like light-skinned niggas.
She has infinite disdain for the ginger crowd, honey.
She had hair of auburn hair, bless her heart. Like, oh man, Dolly is never letting go of these redheads.
Hey, honey bee.
It's Dolly P.
I'm just imagining the discourse between them two, just talking about these cheating ass, mistress ass men and women that they done dealt with.
Also, man, it's an internet joke, but it's never going to not be funny. What the fuck did Jolene look like?
I need to know.
That had to have been the baddest white woman of all time, because if she the had to cause be the other mad. Baddest white woman is just like, yeah, that bitch with red hair. That hussy.
She had the bitches shook, apparently.
One other thing I've loved about this album is the memes from it. And then people play that clip of Dolly pointing at that woman with the red hair, be like, Jolene look just like you, red hair hussy. And then her laugh. And I'm just like, that really was, she ain't no diva.
I like the fact that this is also like another layer of the personable moments of Beyonce. Like, she ain't gonna let us forget that nigga had her fucked up.
Poor Jay.
Fuck.
That's my nigga, man.
Fuck poor Jay. He knew better. But yeah, Dolly being on this.
Now, this is going to be a controversial... It's not a controversial take, actually. You know, the Beyonce version is okay. I mean, I get it. But, you know, at the end of the day, Jolene is top 10 songs of all time.
The original.
Yeah. I feel like that's a perfect song that can't be improved on, and it wasn't improved on, but I still love Beyonce, and I like this version of it.
I like Jolene. I like that line when she said, I'm still a Creole
Banji bitch.
From not Louisiana, but Louisiana.
I mean, I like it, though. I like within the context of the album, it's just, I mean, Jolene wanted them once. But I get why Dolly Parton wanted it, because she was like, the last time a black singer sang one of my songs, it made me a lot of money.
Yep. She said, if anybody else can do it other than Whitney, it's going to be Beyonce.
But for years, she always said she wanted Beyonce to sing Jolene.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's fulfilling.
Another full circle moment.
Yeah. After that, we got what?
Daughter.
That's such a great fucking, like, song. And that is a full-on film in that we got Beyonce singing about murder. And it's riveting. And that shit is a banger. Bro, Stephanie hit me up after she listened to the album. And we were talking about the opera part of it. And she was like, this bitch got opera singing in her. And then she's like, I realized that was her. And that I'm like, oh her. My God. Like, bro. She was displaying a lot of different parts of her vocal ability that only she can do. That's why I feel like a lot of y'all just like, you can never say she can't, she's not as good of a singer as this person or whoever. No, it's like she was trying to prove to all them hating bitches that no.
She's given us opera before.
Yeah, Ava Maria.
Ava Maria, and then she had an opera breakdown on not Bow Down.
Why can I not think of it? But yeah.
Yeah, she's given us
opera. And then she's also given us the greatest opera of all time, Carmen the Hip Opera.
Can't forget about that classic.
Brief aside, the actual Carmen opera is fucking amazing. And then Carmen Jones with Miss Dorothy Dandridge and Harry Belafonte is also fucking amazing. If y'all ever get a chance to enjoy those. I told y'all, man, look, bro, I'm in my deep music bag now because I'm tired of motherfuckers acting like I ain't that nigga.
I ain't acting like that. I'm already knowing.
Real recognize real.
I'm already that. Sometimes I just got to come in here and sit down and shut the fuck up.
I really don't be liking to try to feel like I do sometimes pull back a little bit because I feel like if I go full music nerd, I'll lose a lot of people.
But I don't think so.
Yeah, it's just my own insecurities. I'm working on it, though. I'm going to start doing more.
I think that's a part of imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Even that is the crazy part about imposter syndrome. Even when you know something about yourself, you will still doubt it. Still
question it, yep.
And then you just got pushed through that.
Yep.
This whole podcast is us pushing through that, both of us. After that brief aside, okay, we're at Daughters, and then we got Spaghetti.
Yep.
Is Spaghetti the sequel? Well, no. Daughters is a sequel to Daddy's Lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Then Spaghetti. I love rapping Beyonce. I love rapping Beyonce so hard. And then I also know Hov's pen. And when them credits came out, I was like, yeah, I know Hov. I know Hov when he writes.
Listen, the cadence, the tongue, the
I'm Thanos.
Thanos. What you said? Like what? Beyonce be spitting,
bro. It's just amazing. It's just fucking amazing. After Spaghetti, we got
Alligator Tears.
Alligator Tears is my favorite song in this album, by far. There's a vulnerability in it, like we talked about in text a little bit, that happens in it, and it's just like the tragedy of losing yourself within somebody else, and how that feels. She put that shit on a record. And I listened to that shit back to back so many times because it's like, oh my God. And then also that's where like this album starts to shift into. I like the shifts in it though, because it's keeping my attention throughout. It
keeps it interesting, yeah.
But the writing on Alligator Tears is fucking amazing. And then I kept hearing a Radiohead influence. And it wasn't until last night that I really realized what it was. This sounds like Optimistic from Kid A by Radiohead. If y'all follow me on IG, I posted them back to back. I couldn't sync them perfectly up because, you know, I was a little intoxicated. So, but that's like, you ever hear something you can't place where you hear it?
Yeah.
And what it sounds like? It wasn't until last night when I was listening to it that I was like, oh shit, it's Optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love Kid A. And there's a lot of Radiohead influence on this, on the second part of it. And I saw on Balmani's podcast, he talked about, Spencer talked about that. I was like, okay, so I wasn't tripping. Because I couldn't place where it was, but I was like, this sounds like something. But it all came through yesterday when I was listening. But yeah, the guitar on Optimistic by Radiohead is very similar to the guitar on Alligator Tears.
See, this is why I just know in my spirit that Act 3...
it's going to be rock. It's got to be. We're at what? We're at the third part of this album.
Yeah.
This is where it shifts and makes it... it's no longer just about country. Which I'm glad she came out before the album came out and said it wasn't a country album, it's a Beyonce album.
Mm-hmm.
It gave her a lot more freedom. But also it does start to reclaim the Americana vibes.
See, we're still in that motif of reclamation.
Yeah. And it's still within the full context of what all of these acts are going to be.
You know what I was thinking, though, too, just to piggyback off of you saying how she prefaced it with, you know, this ain't a country album, it's a Beyonce album. I really wonder how the criticisms would have gone if she didn't classify this as country and just put it out like a regular pop, hip hop album, if people would be saying anything about her crossing over. Because I feel like people started jumping on it or against it once they heard, like, oh, this is about to be a country album, before even hearing the album.
Yeah.
There was a lot of early criticism, like, country, like, how is she just going to cross over to country? And then when she did drop the two singles, everybody's like, oh, this ain't country, this ain't blah, blah, blah.
Which I don't know how you listen to both of them singles and you don't hear country. That's the other shit that people be playing in our fucking faces.
We, like, honestly need to, like, we need a more complex and in-depth definition of the term genre. But also, it just goes back to people actually listening to and understanding music. Is there's so many elements of music that categorizes it. Like, there's not just one glaring layer that determines a genre that something can be in. Like, I feel like a lot of people think that, especially with this, for, you know, you to classify your music as country is either you have to have a certain southern drawl or a twang when you sing, or there has to be guitar, there has to be
a fiddle, it has to be banjo,
some banjo, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that's not always the case. Like, those are not the only elements of country that can determine whether something is country or can fit into the country genre.
Charles Barkley has this thing to where when he describes LeBron, early on in LeBron's career, he kind of was positionless. And, like, people started saying, like, point forward, which are legitimate things. But he was like, positions are for people who don't understand basketball. Genres are for people who don't understand the complexity of music. It's just easier for the layman to sort it.
Yep.
That's what it is. So when...
easier to market.
Right. And then so when you tell me this isn't country, there's a racial dynamic to that conversation that people are afraid to admit.
Right.
But then also there is a... they don't treat it the same with everybody. Because all these modern country albums have elements of trap music and rap and rock and all these other things.
And then nobody say shit.
No, nobody says that's not country. And it's on country radio.
Riding Morgan Wallen's coattails.
Morgan Wallen had a track with, what's his name? What's that boy's name? Dirk.
Oh. I don't know, because I don't listen to Morgan Wallen.
Yeah, I mean, I try to avoid it. I mean, I recognize he's good, but yeah. Anyway, nobody says Morgan Wallen isn't country. It's race, bro. That's what it is. Black people help create country music, and then white people shut them out of it for years. So all these people are trying to find a way of saying, but it's not white enough.
Yep.
And that's where these people are getting in trouble.
Mm-hmm. There was one girl on TikTok that said something like, obviously it's a hot ass fucking take. She said something like, you can't stick to your genre. You have to cross over to,
I saw that,
to country. And I'm like, what the fuck is your, what do you mean, you people, basically? Like,
did she just call me a hard R?
Your genre, like,
go back to Africa. I mean,
that's a, yet another thing people don't understand is life evolves. Music evolves. Musicians and artists are also allowed to evolve. Just because you start out with doing one genre or one type of music doesn't mean that you have to stay there.
Yeah.
You're allowed to. Taylor Swift did it.
Miley Cyrus done it.
A lot of people did it. You're allowed to switch over if you want to.
Post Malone is in the process of becoming country. Now, what I will say is I don't like that boy, but his country shit is going to be amazing. Because if Beyonce made it where I like a Post Malone song, that is goddess.
And maybe she did that because she knew that he was about to also take the leap. She giving him his intro.
We got to talk about Two Most Wanted.
Oh, my God.
I know. Did I skip anything?
Smoke Hour 2 was just another interlude. And then Just for Fun.
I love that song.
I love, too. I love Just for Fun, too.
What's his name? Who's the boy?
Willie Jones.
He is a great country singer. And if you didn't know he was black, you, yeah. Because he can sing. He can sing.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Two Most Wanted, though.
Boy, 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 boy.
That Miley Cyrus.
In my fucking feels. Smacked. Smacked in the feels, honey. Miley with the low, then them two harmonizing.
Bro. They both have such raspy voices. Miley's is from years of smoking and doing drugs like the rock star she is. Beyonce was just blessed with God's gift. Either way it goes, them two women found a way to reach each other. And I wouldn't normally say this. Miley almost got Beyonce.
Listen, Miley was singing on that thing.
She won them once.
She was giving strong, clear lows and emotion too. This song has so much fucking emotion.
Yep. And it's also, I mean, there's a hint of homoeroticism, which I'm not opposed to, because I'm like, these people sound like they like each other. It's also the Thelma Louise vibes.
Mm-hmm.
But they sound so fucking good together. And I never would have been like, you know who Beyonce needs to have on her fucking album?
Never.
Miley Cyrus.
Never would have thought. Never.
But now that I've heard it, I want to hear that shit again.
That song, oh my God.
I'll be your shotgun rider till the day we die.
I was weeping.
Oh, man.
Smoke out the window driving down the 405. I'll be your backseat, baby, driving you crazy anytime you like. What?
It's just different, bro. Man. And then I dare somebody to say that's not a country song.
Man.
Like, get the fuck out of here, bro.
Like, you got the daughter of Billy Ray Cyrus.
The godchild of fucking Dolly Parton. She's Nashville royalty.
Huh?
Hey, man. It's just crazy in real time. Like, even though Miley's, like, basically our age, she's, like, iconic already. That's crazy.
She is.
She's 31.
Miley can sing.
Her cover of Jolene.
She threw us off with that rap shit, but...
You know, yeah.
Tom, but she came on back around.
Time heals all wounds. I'm willing to look past that
she
now.
She came back around, honey.
Now, if you ever want to hear a good cover of Jolene, her cover of Jolene is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Miley can sing, bro. And, you know, people didn't believe that when she was a teenager because, you know, it was some moments when her voice was changing that it was a little shaky.
Yeah. No, Miley be singing, honey.
Yes. And that's an old woman trapped in a young woman's body. That's an old 50, 60, a seasoned soul. They ain't old, that's seasoned, baby.
Yeah, Miley got that oil, honey.
That oil.
Okay, after that is Levi's Jeans. Man.
That's such a stupid ass song, but I love it.
I love Levi's Jeans.
It's like
the intro too. It's just like
my sexy little thing.
It's giving down to the honky tonk.
Yep.
Doing a line dance type shit.
I wish I could have a song to where I could act like I was in love with Beyonce and just not people be like, this nigga's dirty backing. Talk about, I wish I was the back of your Levi jeans. I wish I was the back of Beyonce's Levi jeans, too. Post Malone, you a real one.
What is she saying? It? You can be my jeans so you can tug on this ass all night or tug on that something. And I was like, Beyonce.
Hey, she had a couple lines in this album that made me blush.
But calm down, ma'am.
Ma'am.
Beyonce let that sexual adult woman beast out and it ain't never been tamed since.
This is a safe place. That shit be hot as fuck. I ain't going front. Like, goddamn. I'll be like, oh, shit.
It's also just the way that she does it. Like, it be so tactful, but at the same time.
Nasty woman. A nasty woman. But that shit is
a nasty woman.
But yo, yeah, that shit be sexy as fuck. But I saw one review. One dude was like, I just don't buy it when Beyonce is being sexual. Like, what? Sir,
have you seen her perform?
That's
of her slower songs. Have you seen Beyonce
at all? Slow have you roll, seen her?
Slow roll, dirty wine.
Man, Jay-Z the luckiest motherfucking bastard of all fucking time. I'll say that.
And she stay singing about that nigga.
She make horny Jay-Z songs. You know how crazy that is? When she talking all this sexy ass fucking shit, she's
and
talking
we
about
know that it's Jay-Z.
It ain't no other nigga. Jay-Z a fucking legend, bro. Two Games. He got 20 years of Beyonce singing horny-ass fucking music about him. And then I saw that other, like, that white woman that went viral talk about nobody finds, like, repeating what Azalea Banks said, nobody finds Jay-Z attractive. Which also I always feel like is rooted in featureism.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has noticeably African features.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody finds him attractive. It's somebody that listens to this podcast. They've always talked about they found him attractive. Beyonce finds him attractive. Like, what? People get so fucking weird about her.
Just because you don't find him attractive don't mean he's attractive to no one.
Right. I mean, he's clearly fine enough to get Beyonce. You couldn't tell me shit. You couldn't tell me fucking shit.
Bro, what? Got the hottest chick in the game.
Wearing my chain? Ho. Huh? Okay. After Levi's, we got what?
Flamenco.
That should have been longer. But the album is already long enough.
That was a cute little bop.
Flamingo. Then we got
the Linda Martell Show interlude.
And then this next section of the album is my favorite part of it. Because, bro, Yaya.
Yeah. Ooh.
Bro,
that 50s sock hop.
It's Sullivan skirt. Bullshit.
Poodle skirt fucking what they call them damn shoes that was black and white.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's just giving like
it's straight up 60s Ike and Tina review.
Somebody on Twitter said, Yaya is for the girls that still listen to Why Don't You Love Me? And I said, that's exactly it.
That's good.
Because Why Don't You Love Me? She had that whole like 50s aesthetic with the high waisted shit, the pencil skirts, the ruffles, the updo, the cat eye glasses. Just classic pinup vibes.
If we're going to be honest, that's when Beyonce's in her bag.
I agree.
Because they're like, even when she was on stage with Tina, that's a star.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's gotten close to having that magnetism on stage.
With another legend?
Yeah. But Monty said that this song is where the Tina and Beyonce comparisons don't hold up. And that's not a knock against Beyonce. That's actually a knock against Tina Turner. That's how good she is. And I was like, yeah, that's a fucking bar. Disrespectful as fuck to say to people, because white people love Tina Turner.
Yeah.
White people love Tina Turner. Black people love Tina Turner. But this shit, Yaya, she summoned the spirits of Tina Turner and all of the powerful black women who have ever walked earth and released a goddamn banger. That is one of the three also.
The tambourines, the hand claps.
Gary Clark Jr. on guitar.
Okay.
Ripping the fuck out of it.
Okay.
To where it sounds like a sample. Dude.
Now it's making sense.
I gotta see that live. I gotta see her either on an award show doing Yaya or in person. The tour is coming too. God
damn. Visuals.
That, when that was playing, I saw it completely perfect. And that's why when people started doing the Tina Turner videos with it, we all were seeing the same thing in our head, and that shit is dope as fuck.
Yep.
We got Yaya, and then it goes, what, it's Desert Eagle? Or no, it's Louisiana.
Oh, Louisiana.
Chuck Berry sample, and that's such a perfect placement for that, because it flows perfect. Oh, Louisiana, then it's Desert Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
Nigga.
Hey, that first motherfucking bass
hit? Who played bass on that? That's who I. What? That's what I want to know. Who the fuck was playing the bass? Because whoever that is, get them in a fucking studio right now.
I mean, my God.
Because that bass lick was nasty. And then she also has this like
Marcus Reddick.
I don't don't know him.
Gary Clark Jr. is on this one too.
Okay.
As one of the guitars. But my God. Then the violin. It's a violin on there. It's not listed, but the.
Yeah. It's just so funk and like. That shit should have been longer.
Bro, that the bass.
Her voice on that sounds fucking otherworldly. Oh, she got that
water. Bro.
And then she is saying the nastiest shit in the fucking world on that song, and it sounds amazing.
She be doing the shit so slick.
Like, that song is filthy.
Beyonce, she be sneaking up on you. It don't be that raunchy shit that, like, you can feel it coming.
Right. This ain't Sexy Red.
This shit sneak up on you. You hear it, and then you gotta run it back like, what?
This is sensual music.
Now, this ain't Sexy Red. This is Seductive Amber. Right.
Seductive Amber?
Seductive Burgundy.
Oh my God. Bro, yeah, this ain't no ordinary shit, bro.
No.
Like.
But then Desert Eagle into Riverdance.
She's playing her acrylic nails in the background of that. And it sounds fucking amazing. When I was listening in the living room, this is so fucking funny. Like, if you've listened to this episode, I mean, these episodes long enough, you know, sometimes when we're recording, Cooper's running through the house and you just hear it. So I kept looking at him, and he's like right next to me. I'm like,
what? You're probably like, nigga, what the fuck is you going through?
Right. Are you high? You smoke weed?
You smoke crack, don't you?
Look at me, boy. Don't you smoke crack? And then I was like, somebody's playing their nails. And then I thought about that Patti LaBelle Dolly clip of them making the beat with the nails. And I'm like,
bad bitches know.
Bad bitches know. Riverdance is so fucking amazing. And then back to, this has just been a long read of that Sam Doll lady. She was also like, at one point, she was like, the lyrics are lazy. Like, she'll just give a command. Like, use some words or whatever. Like, this bitch really don't understand call and response. The basis of American music and African American music. Call and response translates through all of that.
Use some words. Girl, have you listened to the rest of the album? A lot of words?
The other thing that I've noticed in, like, reviews, people think just because they don't understand something that it's it's reductive.
Especially when it comes to anything dealing with art.
Yeah. Like, it's just, oh, I didn't understand this, so it's stupid. No, you're stupid. Anyway, Riverdance, fucking amazing. But yeah, the transition into it is so perfect. And I want to live between, like, that last Eagle and into Riverdance. Like, that is the place in music heaven I want to live in.
The sweet spot.
That is the sweet spot.
The pocket.
I want to live in that pocket. I want to live in Beyonce's back pocket.
Of her Levi's jeans. And then after Riverdance is Two Hands to Heaven.
That transition is also amazing, too.
Another banger.
Bro.
Another banger. Like, how many singles are you allowed to have on one album? Because, honestly, it should be more than the ones that are marked.
We are at about 10 right now.
And it's only, I think, 4 marked total. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, no, it's 6, 7, 8. Singles.
Bro, this shit.
Who you know putting out music with 8 singles?
Bro, she's on another fucking level.
She is like, one way or another, you gonna hear this shit on the radio.
You gonna hear it on somebody's radio. Like, you're going to be turning on NPR and be like, God damn, they playing Desert Eagle in this shit? Like,
it might not be this song, but it's going to be this one you're going to hear. It's going to be another one.
Some of these going to cut through. Hey, it's clear, though. She going for the album of the year. And she like, if y'all niggas don't give me after this shit.
Bro, I want her to burn shit down.
We are burning everything down like January 6th. We're going to make January 6th look like a picnic if she don't win album of the year.
Oh my God, yeah. I was literally thinking, I was like, bro, if they don't award her for this one,
she gonna roll up.
She got to burn shit down.
She gonna roll up at the Grammys like Khaleesi. She gonna burn.
She gonna have a Kanye moment.
She gonna burn King's Landing to the fucking ground.
So and so had a good album or whatever, but
I had the best album of all time. I'm just not. Later this month, that lady coming out with an album, and it's gonna be. Also, this is a brief aside. There's so many clips from the video last week that I couldn't use that were so fucking funny. Like, we were talking about that person who was, like, we found out things about people that's been on this podcast, and you looked at me, and then you looked at the camera, and then you looked back. I was like, this shit is fucking hilarious.
I was breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah. And you did it so perfect. I was like, oh, man, this is amazing. I'm like, I'm just going to keep this in my phone for later when another episode. Like,
just a silent clip.
Yeah. So, yeah, both Two Hands to Heaven.
Then Tyrant.
What the fuck was this lady on? Like,
crack.
What the fuck, bro?
Because what?
By this time I'm listening to the album, it surpassed like my thoughts of what would be on the album. And we're like just in like overtime and we're just like, holy shit.
Just coasting.
I'm like, I'm here for the ride, baby. I don't know where we go land, but I am here.
On cruise control at this point.
Hey, Beyonce take the wheel.
I think at one point, like when I first listened last night or last Thursday night, I just ended up laying down. I closed my eyes and I was just like, at this point, I'm not looking at nothing until I hear some shit that I'm really vibing to see what the name of the song is. But I was just literally taking it all in at this point, like just. I don't want to see nothing. I'm in the dark. I need to hear all the vocals, all the instrumentals, all the key changes.
Is the speaker still working out for you?
Oh, yeah.
Bro.
That speaker is...
It's perfect for an apartment.
Booming.
Yeah.
It's I know my neighbors be mad, but I dare them to say
something. Right. You like Beyonce too, nigga.
I dare them to say something because that motherfucker gets up there.
Bro. I used to be killing it in my apartment. You could hear it all throughout the apartment.
Oh my God.
Even in the house here, it was fucking booming.
After Tyrant is Sweet Honey. Just like complete vibe switch.
I'll be honest.
I don't know about the placement on this one.
It kind of throws me off. I like it, but it's just like, yeah, it's not my favorite track. I like parts of it, though.
I feel like this one could have came after Old Louisiana and before Desert Eagle.
Yeah.
Because it has that similar bass line with the doom, 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 doom. And then if it went into...
Hey, that shit ride.
Right. And then if it went right into Desert Eagle, doom. Yeah. Doom, doom, doom. Like, just carry that bass line and then into Riverdance. I feel like bass. It would have. But you know, hey,
we're not gonna mock mother.
I'm nobody. This ain't a Kim album. It's a Beyonce.
This is
album.
A Beyonce album. This ain't no Juice album. This is hey, mother was mothering.
Then it finishes with Amen, which. fully circles back to American Requiem. Mm-hmm. She brings back that gospel motif.
After all them nasty ass lyrics. I love it. I love it. Sinner and Saint in the same album. God damn, I love her.
We love a duality type bitch.
Have you done what the Twitters and the TikToks have said?
What?
That the end of Amen transitions directly into...
Back into American Requiem?
That and into Renaissance.
What?
Yeah. It circles all the way back. Like on our playlist, I made a thing of it to where it goes straight from Amen to it. And bro, it is perfect.
Now I gotta, now I
gotta. Hey, she a witch. She's a fuck. Hey. Now.
Oh my God. And it makes sense because that last single piano note was kind of a tonic note, which tonic notes typically lead. That means that something is like continuing, like it's not a it's not a finishing note. It makes you feel like it's unfinished. This bitch.
She also, some of it, they said this album was supposed to come out before Renaissance. You
know, people were saying that, and I'm like, how do y'all motherfuckers know?
She put out a press release where she talked about it.
Oh.
I had it on my phone. But yeah, she talks about the making of it. Hmm. And she said it was supposed to go into it, and then that's when people started being like, I wonder, and then it was like, holy shit.
But it's so crazy, though, that Renaissance still worked as the first drop because it starts off with these motherfuckers ain't stopping me.
And then Renaissance...
It still makes sense for it to also be second because you done went through talking about all this shit and now you talking about how these motherfuckers ain't stopping you.
And then also, Renaissance cycles in itself, too.
Yeah.
Which we all know, but... Yeah, bro. The first time I heard.
First of all, to make one album that cycles into itself and then make your second album come behind that cycle back into the first.
Witchcraft.
This bitch is changing the musical experience and it's wild. It's wild, bro.
Okay. So. I'm not going to ask you to rate the album because it's reductive at this point. Thoughts, which is also...
So, collectively, the way this album... makes me feel is like I'm on a new journey with her, almost like this almost feels like it's a shift about to happen in my life too when I'm listening to it, because it's so different. Like, it's such a different sound for her, and it's kind of putting us in a new mindset. And to me, it just made, you know how when seasons change or when they're about to change and you can feel that change coming, That's how I feel. Like, the season of music is about to change. Or at least I hope. But it, like I said, it also makes me feel like while I'm listening to it, that I'm about to step into a new season and a new journey and just nuances of myself, because I do feel personally connected to some of these songs on here. I think Beyonce is always in her fucking bag. And I think this is also making me look at her differently. Like, so when Self-Titled came out, I felt this way. Because I also felt like Self-Titled was not more grown, but it was when she was starting to let us see more of herself as a person and not just an artist. Like, she was being more sexual. She was talking about more pain and just more like gut-wrenching things. I feel like this is one of those moments for her again. Like, I feel like we are getting to know Beyonce through her music and not through her personal life and drama, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what keeps her music so interesting. And she said this in her documentary, Life is But a Dream, is
the sacred text.
People get so wrapped up in shit that they hear in the media about an artist, and it can affect their art, which is why she stays quiet and she don't tell us nothing. Because what she wants us to focus on is what she gives us.
That mystery behind art is lost, and the keepers of it are Beyonce and I would say Kendrick Lamar. They're mysterious still. They tell us what they want us to know, and they provide what they want to provide, but Beyonce is opening up. I hope if the shift happens, we go back to making albums.
Yes.
I'm tired of singles.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, she just posted on her story. Hold on. Texas Hold'em Pony Up remix.
Ooh, who's on it?
Wait a minute. Hold on. Bitch, not the remix.
But, yeah. This album is not perfect, but damn good. If I had to rate it, I give it a 9 out of 10. It is kind of all over the place, but I feel like in the grand scheme of it, it's the reclamation of Americana, and that's what she accomplishes in it. Could it have been shorter? Definitely.
But also, it was only an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah, but it's no tracks that I skip, per se. It's just,
I skip after the, well, I can't say what listen, because I don't know how many times I listen. After a couple listens, I definitely skip through the interludes.
I have skipped Jolene after a while, just because, like I said, Jolene's top 10 track of all time. But that's just me. An album doesn't have to be perfect to be perfect, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen where people say that they want kind of, I don't know. It's like, I just really enjoy this album. I enjoy listening to it, and I enjoy the opportunity to listen to it again and hear something different. Has your ranking of Beyonce albums changed? I guess that's the best question for the stands.
Because now I got to go through the discography. Woo. Honey. I am going to say the most recent ones are in the top. Like, I liked B-Day and Sasha Fierce.
I personally don't like Sasha Fierce.
Those have aged out for me, though.
Yeah.
Sasha Fierce was during my early college years, and I feel like I was emotional to those songs, but I don't think I can rank them right now.
I will say that Lemonade is now officially not in my top three.
Lemonade been knocked out?
Yeah. Renaissance is still probably my favorite. Cowboy Carter is a close two, though. Cowboy Carter might go down as the Beyonce album for the masses. Renaissance just means something different to me. And I think a lot of other people. Because Renaissance is just... she nailed it. She nailed the landing perfectly.
Yeah, I agree.
So to me, I got Renaissance is one, Cowboy Carter is two, and Self-Titled is three.
So I think I'm going to have Cowboy Carter is one.
Do it.
Renaissance is two. It's between four and Self-Titled for me. Four, there was an intro to a vulnerability because she was pregnant with Blue.
And then also she had fired Matthew Knowles. That's the beginning of modern Beyonce.
God damn, that's hard. Self-Titled, though, was just so fucking gripping and raw and
nasty.
She gave us, once again, so many different elements of music.
And then the visuals, of course.
Then the visuals, then the sneak attack.
To me, the reason I take Lemonade out of it is, this is just personal preference. I don't connect to Lemonade as much. But I also realize it's not for me. That's a very specifically coded woman album and a specific story about women that I can't connect to. And I understand that. But it has some of my favorite tracks on it. But it's just, I understand why people feel like nothing can top Lemonade to them. That's, I guess, how I feel about Renaissance. This ain't no homemade shit.
Every time, though, it's crazy because every time she drops an album and does a tour, we always say, like, what the fuck can you do to top this shit?
I can't wait, though.
Every time she tops this shit.
Thanks for tuning in. You can find all of our links and merchandise at www.thesuburbanpodcast.com. You can also get your listens in on any of these streaming services, such as Google Play, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. Subscribe.